This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. It's never easy to discuss death and end-of-life issues, but these are essential conversations. Some discomfort talking about that now can save families real pain later if you wait until there's a decision to be made right in front of them. But there are many ways to talk about this in the up close and personal, but also in the larger look of what Americans at large are thinking about this very sensitive issue. A recent poll from the Pew Research Center focused on how Americans think about end-of-life medical treatments. Should doctors always try to keep patients alive, or should people be allowed to die under certain circumstances? And there is some disagreement about what that poll is actually telling us. Ashley Carson Cottingham joins us. She's the director of the Policy and Advocacy for the Compassion and Choices. And we also have in the studio Jason Morrow, a palliative care specialist and ethicist at the UT Health Science Center. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So, Ashley, let me ask you, kind of describe what's in this poll. What's this poll saying?
Well, I think there's a lot of really interesting information in the poll. There are findings that, you know, two-thirds of Americans say that there are at least some situations in which a patient should be allowed to die, and that the share of people saying that they would stop their treatments so that they could die peacefully has remained about the same over the last 23 years.
So it shows a trend, like a growing trend in the number of people who are saying that what?
Yeah, there's a growing minority that would like to receive all treatment possible, I believe, in every situation. But and so that's what a lot of the different media outlets chose to focus on in this poll. And I didn't find that to be the most interesting component in the findings.
And so what did you find to be the most interesting component?
Mainly that, you know, two-thirds of Americans say there are some situations in which a patient should be allowed to die. I also thought that when Pew asked how individuals would feel in specific situations, so one of the questions asked if people would tell their doctors to stop treatment if they had a disease with no hope of improvement and were suffering, and 57% of Americans said that they would stop treatment in that scenario. And then they went on to ask the question slightly differently, to ask if people would want to stop receiving treatment if they had an incurable disease and were dependent on someone for their care. And the percentage was 52%. So to me, I found that the way you ask the question and when people think about their individual situation and what they would talk with their doctor specifically about really has an impact on their end-of-life healthcare decision-making. And then also there's a growing share of Americans, 62%, that say a person suffering a great deal of pain with absolutely no hope of improvement has a moral right to, quote, commit suicide, which is up from 55% in 1990.
Jason Morrow, a palliative care specialist and ethicist at the UT Health Science Center. What was your take on this poll?
Well, thanks, David. I'm a big fan of The Source. I think you do a good for our community by letting people call in and keeping the conversation alive. I think for this poll, I think Ashley's right. How you phrase the question has a lot to do with what people say. These are phone call interviews, calling people on their home or on their cell phone. In reality, when you think about hypothetical circumstances under which you might die or be allowed to die, you tend to hold on to certain beliefs about yourself. You ask an adolescent, well, would you want to die if you had pain and were dying otherwise? Would you want to die if you had an incurable disease but were a burden on others? And you're likely to get a split of extremes. Either, sure, I would want to do everything. I'm a fighter, because that's part of what you consider your identity. Or you might say, no, I don't want to live that way. Let me go. But with experience, especially with chronic illness, which is the most common circumstance that would precede a terminal illness, you gain a lot of information and insight about your own identity. And people who have been through cancer or COPD or multiple strokes have experiences of the toll it takes of going in and out of the hospital, dealing with pain and debilitating illnesses. And it's in those circumstances where the questions are obviously most real. And what I find in dealing with patients and helping them cope with chronic illness on a day-to-day basis is that the questions of personal identity and personal value and what matters most, and among those are spiritual beliefs, really will help frame the choice and the action that is taken. So in every conversation that I meet with people who are dying and have choices about what types of treatments that they will continue to perhaps carry their life on for weeks or months longer, I ask them what's most important to them. Tell me stories about someone else you knew who had a similar illness, and what did you think of that? And the most important thing I can convey to them is that even if you don't want to fight with chemotherapy, surgery, dialysis, multiple admissions to the hospital, living in the ICU, that doesn't mean you don't have a respect for life and the life that was given to you. It doesn't mean you don't care about your life, your family, your community. It just means that you want to stop, potentially, a type of treatment that has the chance of sustaining your body longer, but you don't want to die that way. And in the end, I think this poll is positive in showing that the majority of people do want to have some control over how they live and die and would respect other people's choices. But I take it with a grain of salt because it's theoretical, it's over the phone, and people aren't necessarily informed by an experience with chronic illness.
So our phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. We like to ask our listeners if you have evolved in your thinking about right to die and about end-of-life issues. We like to hear from you about what you used to think, what you think now, what you think needs to be weighed. If this, what happened to you, if this circumstance, you probably, many of us have gone through this. I've gone through this with my family. It's a tough call. And it changes you once you've gone through this. So, I mean, it sounds like, Jason, when you're talking about this is a very complex, very personal issue to answer it over the phone, probably with a battery of other questions they've been answered asked as well. It'd probably take, like you said, take it with a grain of salt what this poll is telling us.
Right. In the field of palliative medicine, which is growing the last 5 to 10 years, there's a movement afoot called advanced care planning. And advanced care planning is a process whereby a patient sits down with a doctor or another healthcare professional to talk about what's most important to them. And part of the process of planning ahead is to be informed about those things that are most likely to come down the road. For example, at the time that you are diagnosed with end-stage renal disease and started on dialysis, that's a great time to plan ahead. Under what circumstances would you consider stopping your dialysis and plant that seed for future thoughts? And that way, when acute illness arises, you can continue to evolve in your thinking knowing that there are options to stop dialysis if it becomes a burden. Most people don't know it, but 25% of people over the age of 65 who are started on dialysis will deliberately stop it because it becomes too much of a burden.
Wow. We're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about a new poll that looks at what Americans are thinking about end-of-life medical treatments. We ask you to call in. The number is 614-8980. If you've given a lot of thought to the right to die and death with dignity, please call in 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. It's a tough call. It's a tough decision, something the family should talk about this sooner rather than later about what to do of when you have to make that tough decision about whether or not to end treatment for a family member who may be brain dead, may be suffering. What to do about that? Right to die, a lot of ways to label this, but it's controversial, and Americans seem to be trying to figure out, wrap their minds around what to do here. With me in the studio to talk about that, we've got Jason Morrow, palliative care specialist and ethicist at the UT Health Science Center. On the line, Ashley Carson Cottingham. She joins us. She's the director of policy and advocacy at the for Compassion and Choices. So, Ashley, this is not just a question in the abstract. This is becoming up before voters more and more. Do you think because it's becoming more of a political decision that we're seeing people more defined about what their attitudes are here?
I think, you know, as we see more baby boomers facing death through their parents' eyes and, you know, thinking about these questions more, it feels that their vision is more clear and that we should all have access to state-of-the-art care and a full range of choices that allow dying in comfort and with dignity and control. And I would just like to highlight what Dr. Morrow was saying and say that I couldn't agree more. Really, a lot of this is about advanced care planning, and that allows, you know, patient-centered care because it allows families and patients to write down and talk through what they would like to have happen when different scenarios arise. And Compassion and Choices, you know, has a lot of those tools on our website, and we welcome anyone to be able to use those tools and call us for advice and consultation through our end-of-life resource center.
All right, let's go to the phones right now. The number is 614-8980, and Jan is on the line. Jan, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I was just calling because I didn't know about these sources that your guests are speaking about, and it would have been so helpful. We lost our father about 60 days ago.
Oh.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. You know, you just have to really think hard as with your immediate family, and with us, it was my brother and my mother and I, and we knew we didn't want him to suffer anymore. It was a very sudden illness. It only lasted 3 days, but it was so important. Because we realized we were very honest with each other, and the doctors were phenomenal. The critical care doctor that we had, and the heart specialist, and the kidney person that came in, they were all just awesome. And I think honesty and really looking into your heart for what that person would want is so important if you don't have the opportunity to utilize your programs.
Jen, so sorry for your loss. And thank you for calling in and sharing that story about your dad. And so your advice to folks is to talk about this now.
Oh, absolutely. Talk about it before. Our, you know, we were so just blessed that we knew our father so well and we knew what his desires would be.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. And again, I'm sorry about your loss.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So, Jason, Jan talking about her family, but it seemed like her family was able to coalesce. But sometimes in circumstances where you've been involved in, families don't often come on the same side of this issue.
Yes, that's right. And Jan, I am sorry for your loss. Sound like you love your father very much. It's in those circumstances where different adult children have different views about what dad would have wanted, where conflict arises. So advanced care planning is important, not just to make people better consumers of healthcare so that their values get represented when they make decisions, but it's also important as a gift to the family to inform them about what they would want. And when you do that concretely, when you do it on paper, it's a way of relieving your family of guilt and of conflict. Too many times, patients don't anticipate that they might end up in the ICU. And if they're unable to speak for themselves, then adult children, whether it's two children or 10, I've seen families at the table with 14 adult children. And of course, not everybody is in agreement. Some people knew dad a little differently than others. Oh, he's a fighter and would never want to stop. Or, no, he's a man of faith and would accept dying when his time comes. And who's right? How do you know? If it's written down in concrete terms recently with being informed by a current or chronic illness, then that document can be extremely helpful. Oftentimes, we'll have these documents, but the language itself is ambiguous, and families are still left guessing what is the right course of action. And in those circumstances, physicians and other healthcare providers, I agree, as Jan said, they should be honest with where things are coming and where things are going and why, and allow families to ask questions. At the end of the day, though, physicians have to offer guidance. And that guidance needs to be informed by wisdom about not just how to use technology in general, but whether or not that technology will help an individual patient. So I know that there are thousands of people in San Antonio right now who have loved ones in the hospital, in the ICU, or are receiving chemotherapy and are suffering organ injury like their kidneys or their heart. And they have to think about, well, what comes next? And that asking, what would I want if this were to happen or something were to happen. Talking about that licitly with your family is a gift to them to make sure that they don't have to guess. They can feel like they're honoring your wishes.
Back to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Let's get Kat on the air. Kat, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question regarding terminal illness and one's ability to decide if they want to end their life if they've been suffering for, you know, a lengthy time where there is basically no way out. You know, they're going to die. My question is, under the, you know, Obamacare and these new insurance plans, are those decisions even are those decisions even an option with insurance plans, with assisted suicide? Is that even up for an option, or is that non-existent?
Okay, Kat, let me see if I can get you an answer for that. Ashley Carson Cottingham over at Compassion and Choices. What do you say about that?
So the Obamacare Affordable Care Act, you know, is simply giving people access to health insurance coverage. And, you know, some of the things that didn't happen under the Affordable Care Act was a provision that would have allowed reimbursement for physicians when they have conversations with their patients about the variety of end-of-life options. And so that's unfortunate, but we still encourage everyone to have those conversations with their physician, you know, whatever their choice might be and what and how their certain circumstance, you know, what their options are. You should definitely be talking with your physician about that. There are places in the country that allow for a practice called aid in dying. Assisted suicide is really polarizing language, and it's not medically or legally accurate, but it's something that is perpetuated. But for example, in Oregon, Washington State, Vermont, and Montana, there's a practice that allows mentally competent, terminally ill adults to request a prescription for life-ending medication from their physician that would control the time and manner of their own death. And so Compassion and Choices fights to ensure that mentally competent, terminally ill adults have access to this option if they meet those certain criteria.
All right, back to the phones. We're going to get Tagwin on the line. Tagwin, welcome to The Source.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I just wanted to lend a comment to this show, which is very important to speak to the public about. My father passed in 2009 after a long, long battle with heart disease, cardiomyopathy, and he was a physician, retired general surgeon. You would think that a surgeon who was competent and their family would have been able to make right decisions in terms of how to handle his care at the end, which really it was the end. But my brother and I, did not get straight answers from his physicians. There was a conflict between his old cardiologist and the new cardiologist. They convinced us to fly him to a university hospital for experimental, it wasn't really experimental, to have an LVAD device inserted. This was an 80-year-old man who'd been in the ICU in and out for 6 months at the end of his life. The end of his life ended up being a horror and painful for all of us. And the bottom line is we did not get clear advice from his colleagues, physicians we've known our whole life. They did not want to talk to us about options. It's time to let go. It's time to look at a palliative program. It was very tragic. So even people who are informed, when there's emotion involved and it's a parent who's fighting, you know, you need help. And if you don't have the right answers or you feel at all uncomfortable, you have to get more advice and ask questions.
Tegwin, thank you for your call. Thanks for that story. And I'm sorry about your dad. Appreciate that. So let me ask you, Jason, when there's a hope there, they offer you a little bit of hope. You know, there is this procedure. Maybe it'll work. I mean, it's hard for a family to say, no, it's time to go, right?
Well, of course, I can sympathize with the need and the natural instinct to hope that someone you love can live longer, and that with just a little bit of fighting we can endure and face another day, even if it only buys us months. Still sometimes doing everything to try to fight for those precious days is worthwhile. And I think of two points related to this story, and one is that palliative care services can and should be offered long before it frequently is called in. And that's because palliative care is supportive care. It's help with pain, shortness of breath, sleeping, appetite, constipation, itching, all the symptoms that the body can suffer from. It's emotional and spiritual support. It's guidance with tough decisions. And it's access to resources, not just hospice, but also rehab and other services. So palliative care should be involved when somebody has a condition that is itself life-limiting, even if it's not obvious that it's at the end. The biggest regret that most families have about hospice referrals is, "Doc, why didn't you tell me about it sooner? We had no idea we had other options." And that's the other point I want to make, is that sometimes prognosticating is very difficult, even for physicians, which is why you get experts in cardiomyopathy or experts in leukemia who have disagreement about whether treatment options are likely to work. And I think that's a healthy tension in medicine, for there to be disagreements. That's what patients want, is their doctors to be thinking and advocating. The most important thing is that we take care of the people as they're with us, regardless of whether or not we go for heroic measures.
Ashley Carlson-Cottingham, real quickly, we saw a decrease, a sharp decrease in the polling of people who don't know. They seem to be more certain about these things. Is that a sign of something? Real quickly.
I think that, you know, like I said earlier, we have boomers and the kids of boomers who are seeing these issues and these situations up close and personally.
So it's becoming
so
more
I
real.
Think it helps you to make. Pardon me?
So it's becoming more real. I want to thank you so much. We're out of time.
Definitely.
Ashley Carlson-Cottingham, the Director of Policy and Advocacy at Compassion and Choices. This is The Source on KSTX.